Good morning, everybody. I hope you can hear me. Can everyone hear me? Good. Okay. So welcome to this session in the summer series. This is with myself. I'm Sean Beckhoffer from the Department of Computer Science. And with me is Steve Pettifer, also from the Department of Computer Science. We'll just give it a couple of minutes as people are drifting in. We're just at 1 minute past 10. We're going to run this session in a slightly different way. So what we wanted to talk about was some experiences that we had in putting together some materials to support one of our first year courses. And this was producing a kind of sort of podcast conversational style of delivery between myself and Steve. Now, we thought that the...
Oh, dear.
I think Sean's frozen.
I think we've lost Sean, which is this is not an auspicious start to the
end of conversation.
Okay, let's hope that Sean can come back in a moment. If not, I will take over. But just let's give him a moment whilst people continue to drift in anyway. I think I'll just ping him on Skype as the back channel.
I'm back.
Oh, you're back. Right.
Hooray. Hooray for Virgin Media. Okay, let's fingers crossed that this is we're gonna stay here for a little bit longer. Okay, so what the plan was that we're going to give you some. I will just show you a little. Here we go. So we have a bit of homework to do. Okay, so I hope you can see this. So what we've got here is we've got a couple of examples of the things that we did. So they're available at these links. What I'll also do is I'll paste that into the chat, if I can find the chat. So what we'd like you to do is spend about 10, 15 minutes, go away, look at one of these two videos. They're about an hour long each one, so don't look at the whole thing. Just look at a couple of 5 minute sections to get an idea of the sort of things that we were trying to do. I've given a couple of suggested timestamps there. So on the first one, the beginning has some quite nice chat, interaction, discussion. About 18 minutes in, there's some discussions using a bit of kit. And in the second example, at about 16 minutes in, there's some illustration of some of the kind of question and answer things that we were doing. So what I'd like you to do is just go away, do a bit of homework, as it were. Spend 10, 15 minutes maybe looking at...
Don't call it homework, Sean. This is constrained blended learning with a somewhat asynchronous content.
Indeed. Okay, yes. So go and do some asynchronous...
You just happen to have a captive audience for the asynchronous bit.
And then it's about 20 past 11. We'll come back and we'll talk through how we did it, what our experiences were, and maybe some kind of pitfalls, gotchas, some hints and tips. So if you're all okay with that, if you want to go away and take a look at these things, and we'll be back with you in about 15 minutes to talk through our process, how we went about doing that.
Feel free to just like flit around in those videos. There's no one specific bit that you've got to see. Those are just suggestions.
Sure.
Feel free to just...
It might actually be good if you do move around, because then different people will see different things and will perhaps get some different questions. We'll stay online here, network willing.
You mean 10:20, not 11:20?
Oh, yes.
Sorry, yes, I mean 10:20. Thank you, Toby.
Yes. Okay.
See you in a bit.
In a bit. Okay, welcome back, everybody. I hope we're all back and you've had an opportunity to take a look at some of the examples. So I'll just say a couple of things before we start going. This session, like all the other summer series sessions, this is being recorded for later use for people who haven't seen this before, who aren't here. I should also perhaps start with a large caveat that what we're talking about here, what we're describing, is merely a suggestion. This is something that will not work for everybody. It will not work for everything. It will not work for all topics. And there's certainly not a mandate that one should use this technique. This is something that Steve and I tried. It worked well for us. We seem to have a positive experience and some good feedback from the students. So we thought it might be useful for people to understand what we did and how we did it. But it's by no means is this a, a diktat that this is how material should be delivered, and there may be other kind of slightly different ways that you might want to adopt the particular approach. So the so what I'll do is I'll run through just some of the background, how we went about doing this, some of the issues that we faced, and then we'll open it up for some Q&A and some discussion. So the background to this was a first year unit on operating systems and computer science. This was a new unit that Steve and I were teaching for the first time this academic year. And we planned it way back in the mists of time as something that we'd largely deliver as a kind of traditional style, slide presentation plus talk. We both tend to use slightly more visuals than texts on our slide, but that's kind of side matter. But the course was accompanied by a comprehensive wiki, which had all the detailed information the students needed. So the lecture delivery was not really about providing lots and lots of detailed content. It was more about providing guidance through the material, introducing big topics and so on. So that gave us a bit of flexibility there. The intention was that we'd split the material 50-50 between us, each of us doing lectures on some topics. Now the unit introduces a particular programming language, a language called C, and we tackled this in the first couple of lectures through doing some live coding lectures. And these are essentially one person in the lecture theatre with an editor and a terminal, writing, compiling code, running code. The other person is there with them, interjecting when appropriate. We used a visualizer to draw pictures and so on. And that material was largely about how memory was being managed in the computer. So it was well suited to that approach. And the students, this was early in the semester, we got some very good feedback on this. The students liked the two-handed approach. There was an opportunity for interaction. There were Q&As. There was a lot of kind of style of things about, well, what happens when you do this? And those questions came both from the students or from one of us, if one person was driving. It could be a bit nerve-wracking because you're doing stuff live and things go wrong. But things going wrong is nice, particularly in computer science. When things go wrong, it's a way of illustrating the concept. So we found that useful. About halfway through, everything went strange, and we had no previous materials or podcasts. Okay, this was a new course. We couldn't kind of revert back to saying, okay, we'll use previous materials, and we were actually still, in some cases, still prepping some of the materials for delivery in that just-in-time manner that we all adopt. So at this point, Steve came up with a bright idea that rather than just recording traditional presentations, we'd actually try and run the sessions as conversations where we just talk to each other about the concepts. So kind of building a little bit on those live coding sessions. So what we did, the way we ran this and the kind of tech setup was that we did these as Skype sessions. So I was sat in my room where you see me now, Steve was where he is. We had a Skype chat running and we would just talk over the slides while they were being recorded. So in the setup, we've got person A, person B. So person A is sharing their screen and recording the screen and their audio. We used ScreenFlow because we're Mac users, but any other screen capture product would work. And person B recorded the audio locally. And this was important because Skype chat audio is pretty poor quality when you're hearing the other person coming through. And for podcasts and these kind of materials, good quality audio is really important. So what we did was we recorded the audio separately, and then we'd splice them together later on in a post-production phase. We used very simple synchronization, kind of the you know, a clap, and when we started the lecture, and then you can look on the audio, you can see a spike and line up those particular audio tracks. It's not quite going back to the clapperboard of Hollywood, but it's that kind of approach there. It's not totally accurate, but it works well enough for coarse-grained alignment, which you can then tweak. As I say, the audio quality was important. Steve was using a fancy USB mic. I've got some audio equipment that I use for other things. So that enabled us to capture some reasonable quality audio, which we then spliced into the recordings. And we can extend that approach to more than two-way conversations. So in fact, one of the lectures that we did was with a third party. We got a guy called Adam Kramer in to do a guest lecturer on security for us. And we ran that as a three-way Skype conversation with us all recording our own audio, which we then spliced together at the end. And this was quite useful having the separation, because you can do edits and tweaks to the separate audio tracks should you need to. So it's easy to re-record bits of speech. It's easy to kind of remove some of the ums and ahs and so on, and having the isolation of the audio tracks works. The separation of the audio streams from the screen capture was also useful when we did the session with Adam, because he inadvertently discovered that the screen capture was not recording what he expected. So we went through this kind of half an hour session with Adam, and it ended up that he'd only recorded one application that hadn't swapped while he was switching. But he was actually able to go back and recreate what he did, recorded a new screen capture whilst listening to the audio that he had, and was able to then reconstruct that. Otherwise, we'd have had to go through and retake the whole thing. We use some post-recording, post-production to take out significant issues. So if there are ums and ahs, a bin lorry going past, this happens during one of our recordings. The bin lorries went past Steve's house. So we had to kind of go back and take out some noise there, restarting when things go wrong and so on. It also meant that we could add in some occasional visuals and content, so we could layer things on. So in some places, our visuals ended up being rather static, but using some post-production tweaks allows us to layer on additional materials that can help keep focus and interest. So often we can have a slightly parallel narrative running within the visuals, which you can layer over later on. And that helps to keep some interest going rather than just having the same slide on the screen all the time. So as an experience, so Steve and I have been using Skype for a couple of years for regular meetings. So we're quite comfortable with that mode of interaction, the conversational styles that works for us. So that wasn't an issue for us. We were used to communicating and talking in that way. I find personally, for the first couple of sessions that we did, I was using a much more presentational lecturing style delivery. I was thinking of it as a lecture. So I was kind of lecturing to Steve via Skype. And that really didn't work when we looked back at what we were doing. It came across as a bit unnatural, a little bit stiff. For me, this is one of the things that I think trying to record a lecture style thing when you simply don't have an audience to react to and to project to is really hard, and it ends up being, as I say, a bit unnatural and a bit stinted. So moving to a more conversational style was just a much more relaxed and natural delivery. I was just talking to somebody, I was explaining topics. So in general, what we found was one person did most of the talking and the other one would just interject the occasional, yes, I see what you mean, and so on. But occasionally we could do bits of ask the audience, which parallel the kinds of things that we would do when lecturing usually anyway. You know, you'd ask for some opinion on a particular topic, or ask a question about something, and the other person would be able to answer to keep that kind of question and answer style going. It's not free doing this. There is some post-production time, and I think Steve will correct me if I'm wrong, I think for the materials that we did, we're probably looking at kind of like for like. So an hour of content probably took about an hour of post-production, maybe a little bit longer, but it's that time kind of was coming down as we were doing it, as we were getting more skilled with using the tools. The feedback we got from this was very positive. The students liked it. They liked the discussion style. They thought it was engaging. It was enjoyable to watch. And in particular, because of the fact that we had the supporting materials to go with it, the students could then go there to look for more detailed information. It's hard for us to provide an evaluation of how well the material worked in terms of delivering the learning outcomes for the students. We had no exam. So this course unit had a couple of pieces of coursework, which was a 20% of the evaluation, but we were intending to do an end of semester exam on this, which didn't happen. So it is hard for us to know exactly what the impact was in terms of the students acquiring and learning the materials. As I say, the student feedback on it has been positive, and the lab work really depended primarily on materials which were delivered before we ended up in lockdown. So that kind of wasn't really something that was impacted. So it is hard to provide some kind of independent evaluation of how well this works. But as I say, that the feedback has been quite positive. Steve, is there anything else that you want to add about the general experience, what we did, and so on?
I mean, for me, it was a lot more fun creating stuff this way than when I've just sat at home talking over slides to pre-record stuff. It was just a much more satisfying experience. I think the bit where the format works best is, so I think when you're just explaining sort of fairly straightforward stuff, having the other person there saying and yes and stuff, that adds something to it. But I think the bit where it really works is when you get into slightly ambiguous areas and there's room for sort of actual discussion, especially when there's no absolutely one definitive answer that you absolutely have to get to. And I think then just being able to expose the thinking process, even if it's slightly artificial because we kind of know what the answer is anyway, but just that kind of toing and froing and exploring ideas, I think that worked really well. So it's a format that I'd like to use more, I think.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I've been trying to think about how I would do this for other units. In particular, could I use it for things which are perhaps, you know, less? So I teach another first year unit, which is a much more formal thing. But I think we could still use this conversational approach to introduce the big topics.
Yeah.
I mean, just with you talking there now, it kind of reminded me of the so for computer scientists, the whole the warm body debugging thing, whereby trying to work through a problem, it's often just really useful just to talk to somebody about that problem and using that approach there. I think as well, going to back to the comment about the areas where there's ambiguity, and I think having for those topics where there is perhaps ambiguity or different points of view, having that exposed in that conversational way, I think is really valuable. Rather than it just being me telling the students how things are, they get to see that there are differing opinions on these particular topics. So particularly those things where there is no one answer, actually having it exposed in that way and seeing, I don't know, disagreements or different points of view, I think can be valuable. Okay, so do we have any questions about this?
Do we want to do this with a blue hand thing?
Yeah, I think that would be best. Let me look at the participants. I see a hand from Markel.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I loved it, to be honest. I wish I was taught operating systems in this way when I was an undergrad. Anyway, so my question is, how many of the questions of the conversations emerge naturally, or is it all of it? Is there any kind of script written beforehand? How much is natural? How much is prepared beforehand?
Shall I say something to that one? It was so the person who would have in the real world given the lecture created their lecture as if they were going to be presenting it on their own. And the other person just said things as we were talking about it. So I think there might have been one area where one of us said, when I get to here, can you ask about blah? But I think maybe one, maybe two, most of it just happened as we were going along. So we kind of had the main thread that the person A had in mind. And then person B just said things when it occurred to them. And we just let it drift sometimes. And in the cases where it had drifted further away from the slides than we'd originally planned, we just stuck images back in the edit. Uh-huh. So for example, there's one example where Sean ended up telling an anecdote about a computer in Edinburgh. And we just put a picture of that computer because it wasn't something that we'd planned to be there. So we just dropped that slide in the edit afterwards kind of thing. But there was very little, the only planning was the person A planning what their main story was going to be. There was no plan for person B.
And I think that sometimes, because although we occasionally we would look and get a rough view of what the other person was going to say, but there were questions. So halfway through, I would suddenly ask Steve a question about, you know, how many 32-bit integers can you get into this bit of memory? And I hadn't primed him on that question, so he had to answer it on the fly. At times we'd get the wrong answer, which was good. You know,
and that was fine. It just worked okay. I should say, actually, one of the things. So since then, I've tried this format in a couple of other scenarios. So I don't know whether you've seen the sort of the teaching college video. There's one where I do it with James Brooks, and what we realised there is we didn't rehearse it in advance, but we talked through what we'd talk about, and what we realised was what we should have really done is just record that thing where we talked it, because the second time when we did it, it felt more uncomfortable and more artificial. So apart from, I think, a couple of checkpoints where you say, you remember at this point to ask me about blah, I wouldn't rehearse it in advance because it didn't work as well that way.
I think that my earlier comment, yeah, about the natural looseness of it being a conversation, I think you would begin to lose that if you rehearsed it a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a plan because clearly you want to know, you have some material that you need to get through, but I think not having it kind of overly rehearsed. I think the next hand may be Ian Stewart.
Yes, thank you. So I've just got two questions. First of all, what kind of recording setup were you using in your own offices or in your own homes? Because the sound quality was very good. And that visualizer, I like that. Again, how are you getting the feed from the visualizer in at the same time as recording the voice and the lecture?
Okay, good question. So I'm recording using this. Okay, so I have various bits of, I'm a musician, so I've got various bits of recording kit around. So this is a nice condenser mic. Right. Steve has one of these USB things.
Right.
And they were recorded in the rooms that you can see. You know, I was sat in this seat. Steve was sat where he was sat. But I think, yeah, it with the USB mics and things, that's where kind of that comes from. The visualizer.
You should have had a survey about equipment, like microphones and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so the microphone that you'll get, it's not exactly the same model as the one I've got here, but it's of comparable sound quality. So right. you'll be fine with those. Okay. And it does make a big difference compared to the built-in mic or a kind of like little, you know,
phone. That was the thing that really struck me about the recordings.
Yeah. And the visualizer, the high-tech visualizer, which was built from my stash of tin tomatoes that I had. So that was what that was using. It was an Android phone. There's a thing called, I think it's called IP Cam. It's just a free app that will that gives you a little web server on the phone that you can then connect to. So I was just doing a screen capture on the browser on my machine.
And it really was held up with tins of tomatoes.
It was a bit of wood on some tins of tomatoes with a mobile phone. I mean, I think if you look around, I think there's some stuff on the Teaching Academy site. There are various bits of people who've built stuff out of Lego and kitchen chairs and so on.
You should be able to ask for a visualizer on that same survey if it's something.
Yes, there was visualizers there.
It's not something I need regularly. I only need. I've just got one time I'm going to use it.
Right.
Yeah. This was very much a kind of, you know, best effort, Heath Robinson effort, but it kind of it worked for the purpose.
Well, art conceals craft, you know. It's no one would have known.
Thanks. Thank you. I think Duncan may have been next. Duncan.
You're
muted, Duncan.
There
you go. Right, okay.
If you're doing, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, if you're doing a lo-fi version of this, you don't want to do the post-production, could you, provided you've both got USB microphones, could you record like a Zoom meeting like this and have comparable audio quality, or do you think you need to record it separately and then splice it together after?
I think you probably need to record it separately. I think the audio quality over things like Zoom, I don't think is great. I think you will have you would really notice the difference between your recorded speech and the other person's. So I would be inclined.
The Zoom option actually is slightly better than what we had with Skype, in that Zoom can record at the center point, if you like. It'll record, so it doesn't. So you're not recording the compressed audio from the other person. So with a decent microphone like the ones that you can get through that survey, you could probably get away with it, but it won't be as good.
And
it would be better than recording just normal PC audio if you do it via the kind of centrally captured Zoom thing, but it's definitely not as good.
And if you plan to do any kind of post production, I think you need the separate streams, because it allows you to splice things in and out.
I mean, just to give you an idea, if I swap over onto, so I'm currently using a little a cheap microphone with echo cancelling. If I swap over onto so I don't know whether my audio now sounds quite different. So this is using the Blue Yeti microphone. So just having a different microphone makes quite a difference to the audio quality.
Yeah. Okay, Hossam, I think you're next in the queue.
Thanks. I was just wondering, is this unit taught by both of you together, or is it taught by just one and then the other is sort of a flanky or whatever they call it? So the unit itself, the operating system unit, is it taught by both of you?
Yes.
It is. Okay. So what you know, you said you got good feedback from the students. What did they like about it and what did they not like about it?
The course generally or these bits?
No, this particular format of delivery.
We could just paste the comments into the chat if you like.
The fact that it is taught by both of you means that both of you are familiar with the material.
Well, I mean, so this is not either of our areas of expertise, but it is a first year course, right? So it's at the kind of, I mean, we were frantically reading the books and the wikis before writing the material, but it's first year kind of core computer science stuff. So it's the sort of thing that any computer scientist should be able to pick up and teach fairly
straight. Essentially, this would ideally only work if two people or more are teaching the same unit, basically. Is this correct?
Well, I'm not so sure. So I think, I haven't tried this yet, but I think you could have it where you've got a buddy who knows enough about the material to not sound stupid, but doesn't know the material perfectly, who could actually be person B. So I haven't tried this yet, but I suspect I could be person B to somebody else in computer science who really knows what they're teaching, and I could be the person there asking, you know, slightly silly questions or probing on bits that don't make sense to me, because if they don't make sense to me, then they probably don't make sense to the students either, kind of thing. So I think you could do it. I don't think you have to have two experts.
Provided, of course, that you have the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt it is more, you know, you're definitely taking, I guess it's probably three times the time it would take to record it on your own, because you've got two people's time recording it and the same amount of time to edit it at the end, something like that. So it is more expensive. On the other hand, if you do it well, you're only going to have to do it once, and you could do it. You can reuse the material in subsequent years. So there's a bit of an upfront cost, but then a bit.
What I meant that the person who's not co-teaching will be essentially giving their time away, with no benefit to them as such.
Sure.
Really.
Yeah.
Okay. So Steve, you were going to show the feedback, I thought.
Yeah, I've pasted some of the comments in the chat.
All right. Okay, thank you.
And yeah, Carol, I think I agree. I think having somebody there, because one of the slight awkwardnesses of being a supposed expert is you don't want to cock things up too much, because then you stop looking like the expert. Whereas if you're there as somebody who's definitely not an expert, if you get things wrong or sound a bit confused, well, that's quite reasonable, because it's not your area of expertise anyway. How many students approximately? 280 for a first year course, compulsory first year course. I think that we could put this in the duties allocation model if it's something that people were really keen on doing. I personally thought it was time well spent.
I think it was fun to do. I think as you've already said, Steve, I found it, I was motivated to do it. And I think actually, given the whole situation that we were in, that was really important as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it is quite hard to untangle some of the aspects here. It was a new course, and a course that, as Steve says, we're not necessarily super experts in. So that's all kind of bound up in the whole experience and process of doing this. I think it would be a slightly different experience doing it on a course unit, for example, that I've been teaching for several years. But I think it would still work. I see that Paul Wright has his hand up. Do you want to ask a question, Paul?
So I thought the format was really interesting, and I've seen some of the previous stuff on it. And I think some of that interest is the sort of chat show response type format, and the chat you've posted on student feedback sort of reinforces that the format works. What I was slightly concerned about is this kind of very disguised didactic teaching almost, because you've got control of the delivered content and you've also got control of the what are apparently questions. It could be quite passive at the student end.
Yes, I think there is a risk of that. But on the other hand, it's if you're delivering stuff by video, I think this is, I don't know, I think there could be a risk of that, but there's a risk that video is kind of passive anyway if you're not careful, I guess.
It just feels a little bit like I don't need to answer the question, sure, because they're going to.
Yeah. I think you'd have to shove that into things like quizzes and tests and stuff outside of the video. I mean, you could also do the kind of standard thing of asking a question, asking them to pause and think about it, and then telling them the answer, I guess. I don't know how well that would work blended in with this kind of format.
Yeah, I just noticed that the videos you directed us to are much longer than James Brooks, for example, would advocate.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, so one of the things about these is they naturally end up being longer than if it's just you explaining stuff because of the backwards and forwards. I mean, also, these were things that we were recording under emergency circumstances, and so our main thing was just get a thing out rather than worry too much about the details. The other thing is I tried doing one of these with James for the very first video that I did explaining what blended learning is, and it really didn't work because what I wanted there was a very short, very focused thing, and the conversation there just got in the way, so we binned it. So I think if what you're doing is trying to explain, you know, point A, B, C, D, and those are the things that you want them to remember, this format doesn't work for that. I think it works best where there is a bit of an opportunity to explore stuff. And I think you can probably break the kind of 12 to 20 minute rule with these, because it sort of becomes more like a radio show than a lecture, which does have the risk of becoming sort of easy listening as well, if you're not careful.
I think with the length thing, even though those they are say an hour long, most of them would break down into smaller chunks. Yeah. I think you could quite easily as Steve said, this was emergency measures, and we were shipping them out and perhaps thinking, oh, let's get an hour lecture out to cover this bit and so on. So I think if we were doing it starting from here, I would do the same kind of approach, but we could edit them into 15, 20 minute chunks that were more topic oriented and push them out as smaller pieces. I think that would work fine, even with the content that we have, because we actually recorded them in smaller chunks. They weren't an hour long conversation, because we kind of found after a period, you know, we'd start drifting or getting tired. So we tended to record in 15, 20 minute chunks, I think, Steve.
Yeah, right? And probably in hindsight, we should have just released them in 15, 20 minute chunks. It sort of felt right at the time to bung them all together. But I think probably if we were doing them again, we'd do them in shorter chunks.
Alex has just said something about presumably person A's mic picked up person B's conversation. No, because we both wore headphones. So we isolated the audio. That's a good question. So we made sure that the audio streams we were recording at either end were just one person's audio. So
once you've got the audio isolated like that, it's amazing how flexible the editing becomes.
Yeah.
Because you really can just move the audio tracks around, and there's no crosstalk, and you can just fix things and coughs and noises and stuff like that without chopping the other person out, and it makes that editing very easy.
Yes, a comment from Carol, though, you could use this to discuss controversial topics. Absolutely. I think, yeah, the conversational style, is it's not about one view. You can have multiple views in there, and I think that's valuable. Matthew has his hand up.
I commented earlier on, you know, just asking how many, but I was more interested in how the interaction with the students came asynchronously.
Oh, can you say that again, Matthew?
I really need one of those USB microphones. Okay, how did the interaction with the students work? Because it was asynchronous, and yeah, you're answering each other's questions, but you do get back to at least a more natural Socratic methodology of lecturing a very large audience. But then how do you make sure, I mean, in any class where you've got up to, you know, 250 students, it's going to be didactic. There's no way of getting sure around that. So I was wondering, how did the interaction with the students work? Because I think that's the biggest problem that I have.
Right. I mean, I think we just have to be honest and say it didn't. In these kind of emergency measures, we just recorded some videos, put them out, and there were a few discussions about them on the discussion boards. But for this particular period, you know, the students were in such a flap, dealing with their own circumstances under the lockdown, that there was relatively little interaction. But I don't think that stops this format being used in a proper blended style, where you are expecting to put out a bit of asynchronous content and then run a proper, you know, under better circumstances, run a proper synchronous activity, whether that's in real life or virtually. But for this particular run, it was just too chaotic. Cool.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening. I hope that was useful, entertaining, educative, all of those things.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
If you have any further questions about it, please feel free, just drop me a line. And happy to discuss this as well. If anyone wants to discuss in a bit more detail the tech that we used, how we went about it, very happy to do so.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.